You're listening to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm Beth Ruyak. Yosemite Valley's been in the news lately because of the Ferguson fire, but also for us because of the podcast that's been produced and hosted by CAP Radio's environment reporter Ezra Romero with Sally Schilling. The podcast is Yosemite Land. 5 episodes have launched. A 6th is up this week, and Ezra's here to talk with me more about it. Hi,
hey,
Ezra.
Howdy.
What was your goal originally with the podcast?
We wanted to... So I covered Yosemite National Park for about 5 years with my last station, Valley Public Radio. And we wanted to explore a podcast about the outdoors or nature or something with the environment. And so I pitched some stories about Yosemite. And my editor was like, why don't we do a podcast about it? You have all this knowledge and history growing up and going to the park all the time with my folks. So we just embarked on this podcast. And to make it more than just the top 10 hikes to go on, how to go up the cables at Half Dome, things right. like that. We wanted to go into a little bit deeper things going on in Yosemite.
Tell me about some of the reaction and how far and wide this podcast has been heard.
Yeah, I mean, I went to a podcast conference a month ago or so, and people from all over the world had listened to the podcast, and people from heavily in California, but people who aren't just nature lovers, people who just know that Yosemite's this cool place, and this podcast is a foray into that.
I know I sound promotional when I say that, and I don't mean to, but I've heard the same thing, Ezra, that people have talked about this podcast, and it's on their radar and their list. And it really speaks to how much people love national parks and Yosemite. And when you're in California, you hear a lot about it. So last week's episode dealt with the Native American history in Yosemite and what the Native community wants for the future. Tell me about that first encounter between white Californians and Native Americans, the encounter that happened in Yosemite?
Yeah, well, there was a legacy of violence and oppression in Yosemite between, I guess, white men and the Native American people there. Everything from a militia going and burning down villages and right. things like that in the 1800s to in 1969, late 1960s, the Park Service, what I learned is the Park Service destroyed the last village there and moved a lot of these people into employee housing and things like that. And so, and there is some good that's come of all that today, 40 years later. But I want to introduce you to a woman named Julia Parker. She worked in the park for more than 5 decades, weaving baskets and teaching people about Native American history. And her family was the last family to leave that last Native American village in 1969.
The superintendent sent a car down, and when my husband was in the backcountry working, and he said, you have to leave the village, Julia. And so we all crawled in the car, and they brought us up here to the new world, new village. They said, that's your house. And so what could you do?
You know, Julia says these accommodations they were moved into were better than the village. They were these basic sort of like 20 by 20 cabins they were in. And the homes they were put in employee housing had a kitchen and bathrooms and multiple rooms. But for her and her family and others, they said, the big deal was that they had this village mentality as a people, and they lived together, and being together in this way kept them tied to their culture. So by going into employee housing with everyone else who worked for the Park Service, it was sort of like the Park Service didn't understand what it meant for them to be in this historical place. They were tied to that spiritually and as a community.
That's a story that is repeated and told across the country in various scenarios, too. What happened to the relationship as time passed between the government and the Native Americans?
There's a big time stamp in the 70s when this group of Native American elders asked the Park Service for their village back. There was already I'm not sure if the village was already set up. The Park Service had a Native American village area where you can go see an example of a teepee and a bark right. house and those kind of things in the Park Service area. But they wanted their village back that was theirs, where they could go there and teach their kids about their ways and things like that. And so it went from the 70s until actually earlier this year, the Park Service and this group of Awanichi elders signed a 30-year agreement saying that you can develop this village back to how it once was. And so what they're going to do is they're going to build 15 bark teepees called umachas. Mm. Each of those is going to represent one of the cabins that was burned down or destroyed. They're going to have an example cabin, the only one that wasn't burned down they're going to have there. Mm-hmm. They're going to have a community center that the public can go to learn about Native American ways. And then they're going to have a spiritual roundhouse, a spiritual center called a roundhouse, where this group of Native American people have ceremonies and births and weddings and things like basic prayer meetings and things like that.
So that addresses some of the past, but it's also going to help to educate the future.
Yeah, I met Tony Brocchini. He was actually raised in this village. I think he was born there. I can't recall exactly, but he was raised in that village. And he was one of the elders who's like, he worked in the park, and now he's actively trying to get this village set up. So let's hear from him.
We may not be here in 30 years, the elders you're talking to right here on this table, but we can set it up for the younger people to continue on for this. We'll definitely make our mark in this village in 30 years' time, or until the Creator calls us.
You know, they are working on this village, and they've been doing it. A lot of these elders have been working on this for 40-plus years, right? Wow. And so they've had all these setbacks. You know, they've been told they can't do it, they can do it, they can't. And they've just been waiting, and this waiting game has finally come to an end. And for Les James, he is who we're going to hear from next. He was one of the elders who asked for the village back. And for him, this is all about ownership.
This is going to be ours. We won't have to ask permission to use it. This whole village. Our dream is someday to own this land.
So what's the timetable on this, Ezra?
They say it'll take about 5 years to build the entire village. They're already building the roundhouse right now.
Oh.
And you can see where they've dug a big hole, and they have the rocks going up all around it, and they're going to put a roof on it. But it'll take a long time to develop this because, you know, Yosemite, it snows in the winter. You're mm-hmm. in the middle of the mountains. They're also going to only use Native American contractors and Native American companies to build this. And mm-hmm. the roundhouse is actually going to be built in the Native American way without any nails or brackets or screws. Everything will be inlaid in a certain way that'll also, from my understanding, will be like earthquake proof. And it's been approved by the Park Service, mm-hmm. which is a huge plus.
So that's the focus of one of the episodes that's already posted online. You have a new one going up later today, and in this most recent one, you actually look outside Yosemite Valley. You look to Yosemite's twin. Can I call it that?
Yeah, twin sister. In this episode, we sort of go to it's our valley edition. We go to two different valleys in there. We start off in Yosemite Valley, which we all know is this like uber selfie spot. There's no bad angles there, and let's go right now, right?
Right.
And then there's another area called Hetch Hetchy, which is about 40 miles northwest of Yosemite Valley. And it's a lesser known spot. And it's this valley that was filled up with water in the early 1900s to provide San Francisco and the Bay Area with water. And so, but there's this group called Restore Hetch Hetchy, led by Spreck Rosecrans, and they want to see this valley restored. And I asked Spreck to envision what he wants this place to look like, or what it did look like in the past. So let's hear from him.
I imagine these cliffs, and instead of this reservoir, a river 300 feet below, with park visitors, with wildlife, with a growing forest, and with people, but without all the trappings and infrastructure and traffic that you see in Yosemite Valley. I see it as the perhaps most prominent restoration project that's taking place anywhere in the United States.
So for them, restoring this valley will create two Yosemite valleys, essentially, in the park. One will be smaller, one will be, but it'll, for them, it'll be this area that will be sort of untouched by humanity. They want to see no buildings like there are in Yosemite Valley. They want to see trails, and they want to see animals back here in this area. And because this area was it was clear cut before the valley was put in. And so when we think about the environmental ramifications of building this for that valley, it just went away. So they would like it to come back. The cool thing about this episode is we weave it together as a bus ride. We go on this open air bus tour throughout the park. You know, they call them the Green Dragon in Yosemite. And, you know, I went on my first one about a decade ago. Mm-hmm. in the park, and we talk about that in the episode, but we go into little scenes throughout this, and one of those scenes, we talk about something called the renaming of all these historical places that happened about 2 years ago.
Yeah.
And so I did talk to Scott Gedeman, who's the public information officer for the park, about that. And he says the Park Service wants to see the names come back.
But the bottom line is, as the issue works its way through the legal process, we certainly have every intention of having the names restored. We feel that these names are iconic names that go with iconic places, and these places ultimately belong to the American people.
All three of these storylines are ongoing and unfinished at this point, from the Native American restoration of a community to what might happen in the future with Hetch Hetchy to the litigation involving the naming of places in the park. So I don't know that any storyline is ever finished in the Yosemite Valley. It has always been so alive and ever-changing. And certainly with the Ferguson fire this year, we saw it change in a dramatic way very quickly.
Yeah, Yosemite National Park is this living organism in many ways, right? From the people that are there to the animals to the environment itself. Also in this episode, we talk about rockfall science. That's where rocks fall off these giant cliffs in the park, right? And they can be a little pebble to tons and tons of rock falling off that could wipe out a huge area. We go into the science of that. And it's also this evolving science because it's always happening. They say a rockfall happens about every 4 days in the park.
Wow.
So there's a lot of them always going on. So this episode is really moving forward, and we talk about that through this bus ride and through all these things that are sort of halfway done and still moving on.
Thank you. It's been great, and I'll add that there is extra content on our website online in addition to the podcasts. And you can find a link to Yosemite Land on our website, capradio.org, or wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks, Ezra. It's really been great to talk with you throughout the process.
Thanks for having me.
That is Ezra David Romero. He is Cap Radio's environment reporter and the host of Yosemite Land, which he produces with Sally Schilling. You can find a link, as I said, at capradio.org/insight. This is Insight on Cap Radio.